Let's begin our satsang by meditating deeply upon the Supreme Self. Withdraw the consciousness from any externalizations, any projections, and release any thoughts, release any affects that come with the thoughts, release any tension from the body, and bring the consciousness into the center of your being. Into the center of peace, of silence, of stillness. And abide in that center that never changes, that is never disturbed. That never loses its self-awareness, its timeless presence. And its inherent qualities of Sat, Chit, Ananda. Being, intelligent awareness, and blissful love. Abide in the purity of that divine love. This love that knows no fear. This love that is deathless and eternal. This love that is the expression of God. Feel the heart and the mind being cleansed and purified by the flow of this love, this divine power. This supreme presence. And enter fully into the realization of the Supreme Self. and feel the peace, serenity, and unity with the God Self. Giving strength and courage, joy and fulfillment to the heart, and wisdom to the mind, and power to the will to achieve the ultimate mission that we are called upon to complete. Shiva, Paramashiva. Shakti, Parabrahman, Buddha, Allah, Cristo, Krishna, Shivaya, Shiva, Namo, Om, Shivoham. Om, Tat, Sat. Namaste. Welcome to another spiritual emergency satsang. We're timing this one specifically to serve the needs of those who are living in parts of the planet with a very different relationship to the sun. While on this part of the planet, we're approaching high noon. And we hope that wherever those who are on the love stream may be residing physically at the moment, that you recognize that our hearts are all part of a unified field. And our connection transcends the limitations of space and time. And we are all in that quantum entanglement, in fact, qualium entanglement, in which the qualities of the one self that all of us are manifestations of shines through the hearts and the minds of every being, with that same infinite power that brings light and love and truth and joy to every being. So, if all of us feel that attunement and that connection, then 99% of the reason for the satsang is already achieved. We are holding these gatherings because the world is in a spiritual emergency. Not everyone realizes that. And some people are awakened in part, but not completely. Some recognize that there is a political emergency, or an economic emergency, or a health emergency, or a food emergency. But many people don't connect all the dots. And so when I go online occasionally to various alternative news sites, I find commentators who are extremely well educated as to the nature of the conflict that seems to be occurring between Russia and the NATO countries, and the military operation in the Ukraine, and the apparent nuclear blackmail that's going on. But they don't always connect the dots between that and tensions with China and the West, or tensions with Iran, or, more importantly, don't always make the connections between what's happening domestically in many countries with what's happening internationally. And therefore, they come to conclusions that are incorrect. For example, they will tend to believe that sanctions against Russia are simply stupid and are backfiring, and aren't recognizing that they are part of a pattern of policies that include the destruction of the people of those governments directly, and that this is just another of those political efforts. But then they remain, even those who have connected those dots, say, between the plandemic and the wars that are going on in various regions of the world, aren't connecting that with the food shortages that are on the way and the other engineered disasters that are imminent, if not already happening in the world. But even those who have understood all of that and know about financial cabals and various other forces that are behind depopulation, etc., don't have an understanding of the spiritual dimension of this crisis and its inevitability, that is not simply a matter of a struggle between good and evil or class warfare or transhumanist plans for a completely different slave population on the planet and the end of the current order and a global reset, etc., that there is far more going on at higher levels of consciousness than is apparent to the ego mind that tries to make sense of this situation with its ordinary criteria of judgment and the paranoid suspicions that are endemic to egoic thought. So what is very important to understand that has been forgotten and has been rigorously ruled out by the current ideologies of scientism and materialism and atheism and all of the various other ideological oversimplifications of reality that come down to mottos like trust the science, etc., which have no relation either to science or to any basis in trust. All of these dumbed-down approaches to understanding reality, even if they include very sophisticated capacities for calculating the strategic unfoldment of plans of various actors and actants in the situation, do not grasp the whole. And so it is that holistic understanding of the real that a satsang is intended to help bring out and develop and enter into the depths of understanding and of the mandate of spirit that is ultimately underlying all of the events that are bringing about a global awakening, not only an awakening to the political, economic, and social situation, but an awakening to the nature of reality itself. And this can only happen when we together, in a way, are all reunited despite all of the chaotic separation of all beings into their particular modalities and sense of conflict and separation from others. And yet we are all united because of the recognition that the planet itself is dying, that all life on Earth is now in the balance, that we are all sharing a common fate, regardless of our political ideologies or loyalties, that there is a greater value that is at stake right now for everyone. And until we understand that greater value and how it relates to our own individual lives on an immediate basis, we will not be able to act accurately in accord with that intelligence that is itself trying to awaken us to experience the grace that is hidden but present in this situation. So in order to get to that realization of the blessing that is hidden in all of the apparently adverse aspects of the current world situation, and the goodness that underlies what is apparent evil and darkness and confusion and chaos and stupidity, etc., that there is an underlying unfoldment of consciousness that could not happen in any other way than how it is occurring at this moment, with the immensity of the pressures that people are under as their taken-for-granted foundations of individual life crumble and fall away. So in order to understand that, let's take the perspective of Satyoga, which is a perspective that has a historical through line since the beginning of history, but particularly the beginning of what this historic period that we call Kali Yuga, which is the final culmination of how the classical world and the minds of that world understood time to be cyclical rather than linear. And if we can approach with an open mind to recognize that potentiality, that as we approach an end, we are also approaching a new beginning, and that there is no death without rebirth, then we can begin to understand how the blessing that underlies this apparent horror is shifting our understanding of reality to such a point where we will soon, if not already, are welcoming the denouement, the revelation that is waiting for us at the omega point that we are imminently approaching. Now, Satyoga itself, which I would say is the internal essence of every spiritual path, every religion. What it comes down to is the purification of love. Love is our nature. Love is the nature of every being. But if that love becomes attached to a false identity, then the love becomes corrupted. It becomes turned into something else. And the moment that we forget who we are, we forget that we are pure divine consciousness, and we identify with matter, with a material body, then that love becomes the love of the flesh, and it becomes the love of sensuality, and it becomes the love of material values rather than the divine values that are of the essence of love itself in its pure form. And so it's this misidentification of consciousness with the body that as it unfolds in a natural way is very beautiful. So for a child, a baby, for example, the baby's love will be accompanied by need. The baby is helpless and needy. Its body is needy. And its love for the mother is unified with the need for her presence, her feeding, her constant attention, protection, etc. And so love that comes in the form of need is appropriate to the moment of our development as individual manifestations of consciousness as infants. However, as we outgrow that, if we stay in a state in which our love is tied to need, then very soon we will reach a point where our internal development is stunted. And this can happen if those needs are not met as an infant, and there becomes a traumatic break in the sense of trust of life and of the capacity to go on being in a safe environment. And then what happens is that the love does not flourish, but will stay at the state of either need or move into demand. A toddler will demand things. It will say, give me a cookie, or buy me that toy. And its love is now in a demanding form. It's no longer in a needy form, but a demanding form, which is much more difficult for parents to tolerate. And then they have to prove their love by being able to put up with those terrible twos, etc. But it's okay when you're dealing with that. But when you get someone who's a teenager and says, I hate you, Mom, give me the car keys, then that love that looks like a demand and looks like a not love at all any longer becomes a dissonant kind of relationality. And so as our capacities grow at the physical level, they have to grow at the emotional and the psychological level, and our love has to move from chakra one need and the demand at the second assemblage point and the will to power and dominance at the third assemblage point. It has to grow into a divine love, a love for wisdom, and a capacity to you to integrate love and wisdom so that the wisdom is the wisdom of love, the wisdom of the heart. And as chakra 4 and 5 open and are integrated into chakra 6, in which those two aspects of our being, of the heart and the mind, are unified, then there is also a unification between the consciousness that can think and feel and that ultimate source of consciousness, which is the light and the intelligence and the bliss of the unmanifest God self that does not enter into the identification with a particular being. And so the love moves from the love that is the love of a body ego to the love that is that of a soul to the love of pure spirit. And that it's that ultimate supreme love that is the unification of all of the creation, all of manifestation as an expression of that one intelligence and beauty and harmony, and that expresses itself in infinitely different ways and is able to appreciate and accommodate itself to all of the different facets of its own being. It's that immensity of our consciousness and its ability to contain multitudes and to accept all of the apparent differences that seem to divide us as a part of a whole in which we are all united, and we have recognized the non-duality of difference and sameness, the non-duality of nirvana and samsara, the non-duality of all of the apparent opposites of the world, that all of them are expressing the combined totality of the manifest and the unmanifest. And it's when we recognize that we are both, that each of us is a split wholeness whose split is itself the opportunity for love to heal that split, whether it's between mind and heart, or it's between the that part of you which is dead or unmanifest and that part which is alive and manifest, or it's that part of you which is not present in time but in eternity with that which is moving through time. It is the unification of all of these different aspects of the real that produces the ultimate self-realization, that is the completion of the unfoldment of our being in time and the return from time to eternity, the unification of time and eternity, which is that moment when we reach the omega point, when we recognize that death is inevitable. But death is the returning to the light of God, to that light which preceded the beginning of time and the manifestation of a world, to the ultimate return to that source of infinite goodness, intelligence, power, and luminosity that is free of suffering, free of all of the corruptions that have occurred in the process of time, and that has the ability, again, because of its reunification from the multiplicity back into the zero point, to give birth to a new world, which is once again in its perfect form, in its form of beauty and peace and harmony and goodness, without the kinds of conflicts that we are dealing with today, externally and as well as the internal fragmentations of ego consciousness, and the return of the ability of all of us to live in the unified consciousness of the God self and to bring about a new creation, literally, from the love that has become infinite and eternal and non-egoic. So our duty at this final moment of time is to purify our capacity for love. If we are still devoting ourselves to the love of money, we will find that that, for example, is not very wise. For one thing, we're entering into a time of hyperinflation. where money will buy you less and less. And the fiction of money will soon be revealed for what it is. Not only that, this isn't a time of ordinary hyperinflation, because even if you're a billionaire, if there's no food available to buy at any price, you won't be able to get it. So our love must not be a love for the kinds of things and possessions and situations that we took for granted was the comfort zone that we wanted to secure for ourselves or for our children or posterity, because we're now at a point where there will be no posterity. We are at the posterior point of the creation that is moving into its terminal phase of death followed by rebirth. And it's only by facing that with great maturity and great love of God, which therefore removes the fear of death, and we recognize that death and God are also not two, but we leave the body for the infinite self that doesn't suffer, whether hunger or fear or pain or any of the kinds of negative situations that we are, the ego mind is terrified of and trying to protect itself from. But we are able to live in that state now while still in the body, in that state of bodiless consciousness in which we have the luxury of emanating love and peace and joy in a moment when that seems very uncanny to many people, unimaginable that we can recognize this as the great blessing that it is. But it is this cleansing of our heart in which we can see reality from the mind of God, not from the very limited ego mind with its narcissistic perspective, but that diamond mind that sees all of the facets of reality as a single whole, that can face whatever must be endured in one's karmic trajectory without any disturbance, and recognize that everything that occurs is occurring within a symbolic dream field that the individual life has crafted in order to bring about the optimal conditions for God realization. Even though the ego itself cannot perceive that, but the consciousness that is love can recognize that its love can only flourish through going through ego death and then being reborn in the life of spirit, not the life of the body, but the life that is eternal. And to live that life while the body is alive, so that the energy of that eternal presence and its protective power of freedom and of immunity to suffering because of its unification with the transcendent light, even while the consciousness remains also embedded within the frame of reference of the phenomenal plane, that the noumenal and the phenomenal, by being unified, bring about a condition in which Buddhahood, or the true nature of our being as free and as not subject to the kinds of suffering that the ego is prone to, that freedom, that victory over pain and death and over fear, that victory is the ultimate revelation and redemption of our being from its fallen condition, and is our return to our divine nature, which qualifies us, authorizes us to be co-creators of the next cycle of the emergence of the divine creative intelligence to bring about a new kingdom of heaven. And it's that attainment of our celebration of realization of God as our innermost being, and letting go of all other false identifications that brings about the ultimate achievement that is graduation from this wisdom school that life is, and enables us to then function at a higher level of protection of the next world from that place of transcendent, intelligent, loveful presence. So this is the opportunity that is being given to all of us to enjoy that status of the God Self that is given as a prize for the willingness to go through the necessity of ego death in order to be of service to a world that is dying and must learn of its true divine nature through those who have attained it while alive. It is this becoming sat, becoming the essence of the real, that is the purpose of a satsang and is the purpose of a global community of spiritual beings who are able to sustain that vibrational frequency of peace and of joy, even at the moment of that ultimate apocalyptic event that is approaching at great speed. So we must not waste a moment in becoming established in God consciousness. And this is only done through the surrender to supreme love and to the wisdom of God and trust in that oneself as the supreme power that is bringing us all home. Namaste. That's the message of this satsang in brief. And I'll stop there and open the floor for anyone who has a comment or question about any of this, and try to help clarify any confusions. Go ahead, Bruce.
Okay, thank you, Shunya. This first question comes from Pris, who also thanks you for today's teaching. She says, connection with you is a healing balm. So I reside in the greater Los Angeles area, and while I'm certain this is my right place, I sure could use a boost, a reminder, a review of the ingredients that make for the healthiest way of being in the world but not of it, amidst the dense incoherence, chaos, and noise, as well as how to gauge when to reach out to those suffering on the phenomenal plane, and when my presumed uplifted, expansive, loving, vibrational presence is the most helpful medicine.
I'm not sure what the question is in that. I heard the need for a boost. Is there a specific question of, is it you're asking what to do?
Right, I think it can be boiled down to this, a reminder of the healthiest way of being in the world, but not of it.
Well, the one imperative is to be real, to function from and as the real self, not as a false acquired self that is actually a reaction formation to adverse situations in the family system as a child and in the social system and all the indoctrinations that we have received from the political and religious and other forces that have wanted to hold us subject to their dogmas and their mandates in order to control us. So the healthiest way to be is to be free of all false ideas. And in order to be free of false ideas, we have to first be free of all ideas, because we don't know which ones are false and which ones are true. And we have to get to the source of our intelligence in the divine nature of our being. So that requires meditation until we have reached that state of silent presence in which the bedrock of our being, the real self, is fully recognized and realized, and no tendencies to separate from it and to lose touch with its realization of non-duality, of the unity of all that is, and is able to function in that unified field without separation and conflict and the need to prove oneself in relation to others, or to create some kind of specialness, or to function out of fear or out of any other intention or motivation or desire. But that state of stillness and calm in which the consciousness is egoless and also without any sense of otherness, that there is literally a unification with all that is. And then that consciousness, once it's stabilized, will spontaneously act from that supreme intelligence and perform whatever tasks are required from that unified intelligence, not from any sense of a separate being who has to figure out those very questions that you have asked. But there will be an intuitive knowing. This is what the Tao is all about, a knowing that comes from the nameless, formless level of the self, that will act through a will that moves from the supreme level of selfhood and develops a knowledge of reality that comes from the source, doesn't come from books or from belief systems, but comes from that source that is always accurate. And it's then that life flows without any questions or doubts. So that must be achieved through the silencing and annihilation of the ego construct and all of the constructs and beliefs that it has acquired, until there is a kind of an absolute freedom from thought that enables the intelligence of the God Self to fill the mind with a different kind of reason, a different kind of realization of what reality is, a different kind of logic that will then move through us autonomously, rather than in a state of some dualistic need to stay attuned to it. One becomes the instrument of that intelligence. So, in short, silence, surrender, take refuge with God consciousness until there's unification, and then everything will happen by itself. Tara?
What you were talking about is exactly what I was thinking about this morning. I was even talking with Nirgun about it, that suddenly now, even maybe not the mainstream, but the alternative mainstream, let's say, are starting to make all these dots. And I've been thinking about this for the past week, because just over a week ago, I get a message from my mother saying, me and your father feel duped about the vaccine. There's no way we're getting more. They're talking about all these current events and making dots, and they're now watching this new news channel, which is alternative, but on the main channels, right? Mm. So I've been pondering this week, and I'm like, okay, you know, because part of me got excited, because I always want to, like, be in tune with the mother. But at the same time, I'm like, okay, but what's missing? Okay, people are starting to make more and more dots and awakening to what's happening on the phenomenal plane, and, you know, discussing things that maybe only the misinformation doesn't know, or, you know, things that, who's the lady, Mrs. Global lady? Catherine Fitz. Anyway, people are starting to, it's not so unknown now, but what's missing, and I wanted to clarify what, when you were saying, okay, you know, they might make this link but not that link, is the main link missing now that this is Kali Yuga and time isn't linear and we're coming to an end? Would you say that is the main missing link now? Is that what you were saying earlier?
The real missing link is the fact that we are in a cosmic divine drama, and that God is the real director of this drama, not evil World Economic Forum members or Bill Gates or whoever else, aliens or whatever is the deep state, whoever you're blaming for this is not the real protagonist in this drama. And until we understand the nature of cosmic intelligence, we will only see part of it that will increase our paranoia. And we may be awakened to certain things that are unhealthy for our bodies. But you're not going to prevent death, even if you avoid vaccinations or whatever else. You're not going to prevent the nuclear holocaust that's coming. You're not going to prevent any of the famine or all of the kinds of global disasters that are underway. So you have to come to terms with the truth about death. And not see it as your enemy and a horror and isn't this evil? We have to see that death is also an inherent part of life, and make friends with death and realize that we are eternal, and then live in the world as eternal beings, because it's having lost that and fallen into mortal mind and its fears that is responsible for how those negative forces ended up able to control us, and why we became fooled by technology and were willing to fall into mass formation psychosis and do all of these things that weren't healthy for us, because we didn't question, and we had lost our ability to think, and we lost our ability to recognize what is good and what is evil on that level of the world, because we had fallen into an evil form of consciousness ourselves. And it's only through our own purification that we can get beyond the duality of good and evil itself and back into the God consciousness that will redeem everyone from this quagmire of apocalyptic disaster that is now being faced. We're not going to get out of it through political upheaval or civil war, which is underway in many countries. That will just increase the chaos and the amount of mass death and increase the time in which that end occurs. So we have to approach this from the spiritual dimension of our being, not only to make proper sense of it, but to approach it with the nobility and the self-empowerment that can face whatever is in our destiny with a sense of our own eternal nature that cannot be harmed by anything in this apparent world that is only a dream. It's awakening from the dream that is the missing piece.
I have one actually, another question. You mentioned it again just now, the duty to, or you said earlier, the duty to purify our capacity for love. Like you mentioned now, It's about the purification, and I guess our whole life here is designed to help purify, but if you could elaborate any more on that, if you could give any pointers to the fastest way to purify, what would it be?
Well, love what is real and what is lasting. At the time of a financial breakdown, when all the systems are bankrupt and about to crash, to give your love to money is not very intelligent. Or to give your love to any temporary things and think that's my source of protection or of power or whatever. We need to love the source of our being again. How many people really live in the love of God? But it's only the love of God that is going to redeem us from this situation, nothing else. And that love will bring the intelligence of knowing how to navigate through this time of such pressures that are forcing life itself to collapse. And so we have to have a value that is greater than biological living, that eternal life of spirit that we have forgotten we are manifestations of. We must return into unity with that source of life. That's the ultimate value. And if we don't have that, we don't have anything at all.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Tara. Here's Lucas.
Thank you, Shunya. It's a great joy to be in your presence again. In a previous emergency satsang, you mentioned that in Satyuga there is no ignorance. And today you mentioned co-creating the perfect world, the new Satyuga. If there is no ignorance and it is perfect, how can there be a fall in the first place from the Satyuga to the Silver Yuga and eventually, you know, to Kali Yuga, bringing all this suffering?
Okay. The kind of ignorance that doesn't exist in Satyuga is the ignorance of God. We are in God consciousness. But we are ignorant of how we got there. You see, if you were in Satyuga and you had knowledge that you got there as a result of a nuclear war with millions, if not billions, dead, and you were one of the few survivors, you'd have survivor's guilt about it. And it wouldn't be a Satyuga. It would just be a horror that you had to live through. And now, what's the point? Was it worth it? You would have all kinds of doubts. As many people actually do have anyway, about is this all worth it? What's the point of creating an evil world like this where everyone's suffering, right? That kind of doubt and cynicism about the creation is here in Kali Yuga, because they don't remember that we have fallen. But the fall happened very, very, very slowly. And it was like a battery gradually going dead, you know, and your flashlight just every night is a little bit less bright than the night before until you realize I got to get a new battery, right? We're at that point where the battery is now almost dead and we're in total darkness. But that happens over such a long period of time that in Satyuga it's not even noticed. And in fact, in the next Treta Yuga, the Silver Age, it's still hardly noticed because everyone is still in soul consciousness. There's peace. There are no wars yet in the world. And everyone is still living with awareness of their divine nature. It's not until the Copper Age and the Iron Age, the Kali Yuga, that that knowledge comes in, okay? So there is ignorance of suffering, ignorance of the ego, ignorance of the fall, but there is knowledge of God. Here we have all the knowledge of science and technology and of the fall of man through Greece and Rome and the Middle Ages and all of that, but what we don't have and we're ignorant of is God. So it takes, in the entire cycle, we have knowledge of all of it. And it's at this moment only, at the very end, that we can have both kinds of knowledge to the full. And that's why this is considered the most auspicious period, just before the Omega point. And they call it the Sangam Yuga. It's a separate yuga in which the confluence of every kind of knowledge comes into the mind of one who is open and receptive. So you have the knowledge of the demonic, the dark side, the destructive energies of the ego and all of the forces at work in Kali Yuga. You understand them and you're not fooled by them. You also understand God consciousness, and it all becomes a unified whole, and it's complete, and the perfection of the divine drama brings great joy. Okay? But that happens only at this one moment, about 2 seconds before midnight on the cosmic clock.
That's very interesting and insightful. In a way, it's bringing me to this other question that I've been contemplating in a while, and it was nice because in a way you answered that in the teaching today and in the answer to my question now. In the last retreat, you mentioned that the ego is a mental illness and that we were not meant to have egos. And I was wondering, how is that congruent with the fact that nothing happens but by the will of God? So the question that I had for you was, what is the meaning and the reason and the purpose, the divine purpose within the plan of God for there to be what is now a world with the one self fractured into billions of egos?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I said that the ego is a mental illness, but not that it wasn't meant. It's part of the design that we go through that mental illness. You learn more from your own mental illness probably than from anything else in life. As long as you can recover from it as well. But you have to recognize that you are mentally ill before you can choose to return to health. But the mental illness was a free choice. And the reason why it can happen is that God gave every soul free will. And we chose to use that free will to become more attached to matter and more attached to what the ego could get for us than what God could give us. And so we chose disgrace over grace. But that wasn't God's choice. That was our own choice as agencies that were given the free will to either stay with God or to prefer to experience the intensity of pleasures that the physical body could give rather than what the soul and spirit would offer. So we've made those choices, but we've seen the result of that mental illness is the destruction of the world. And so now we are able to come out of it, to awaken from the trance that the ego is, and free ourselves from it, and thereby free every being. This is the meaning of being a bodhisattva. It's going through your own inner 12-step program to become free of the mental illness of the ego and no longer an egoholic, and then using that freedom to free everyone by virtue of the vibrational frequency that you will have attained of egoless, blissful consciousness.
Thank you so much. Very helpful.
Okay. Thank you, Lucas. Okay, Purush.
Okay, this question comes from JD. What is the role of fear in spiritual development? If it is to be transcended, then what is the most direct route to accomplish that?
The direct route is love. And we have to convert our fear from fear of death and fear of poverty and fear of physical suffering to the fear of loss of God. Not the fear of God or God's wrath, as many have, but the fear of the loss of connection to God. And so that fear, once you realize you can't lose God, becomes joy, and we become filled with God's love again, and that love conquers all the fears and enables us to regain the wisdom of our true nature that will enable us to navigate through this accurately and to be of service and to become free of karma, free of all the baggage that would cause us to have to go through this all over again another time and to move to a higher level of being than we have had to experience as a result of our letting go of all attachment to the human level of experience and becoming one again with the supreme beingness of our true nature, that has no needs for a world, and that enjoys the transcendent bliss of the unmanifest. Okay, Marjivama.
I have this question about humor.
Mm-hmm.
And its relationship to love. And also this relationship that you've been teaching now about, it's that gap, right? From, let's say, deadly seriousness to humor, whatever, that also has to be integrated. And what congeals it is also love. And the also, is it at this time of Sangam Yuga where the most literally deadly serious acts are happening, that the highest level of humor also has its potential to appear?
Yes, oh, absolutely. God's sense of humor is a very important vibrational frequency to attune to. But just like love becomes corrupted, so does humor. And so there is sadistic humor, you know, that laughs at things that others would be horrified by, right? So we have to purify our humor. And humor is an expression of joy, right, at the highest level, certainly, rather than jouissance, enjoyment of very negative things. If one is in an ego that feels envy, and then your humor would be see somebody else's suffering and that kind of thing. But when your love is purified, your joy is the happiness of others, and the humor becomes a very positive force of the joy of everyone's flowering and flourishing and thriving, and the miraculous synchronicities that appear when we're in a high state of consciousness that bring great joy to us. So the causes of humor change because we project a different world that then comes back to us. Everything that we put out comes back, right? So the more love we put out in the world, the more beautiful things happen to us that bring us joy, and the humor increases. And the more there is that humor and joy, it's contagious. And so that's one of the elements of the bodhisattva's charitra or performance, that is an increase of the level of joy and humor and laughter and the blessing of the realization that all is good, that unifies us again. So yes, humor and love are in parallel, and they always go together in our upliftment, in which we see that we don't have to take anything seriously because it's only a dream. And once we are awakened in the dream, we can enjoy it to the full without being seriously worried about anything. Okay, thank you for that question. Okay, there's one. Lorna.
Namaste, Shunya. It's a joy to be here with you. I have this what you brought up today about the purification of our capacity to love, which Tara just also brought up. I remember from a previous teaching during the retreat, I think Vajra asked the question of why would the soul choose to not wake up from its suffering? Why would it, you know, we are in Kali Yuga, the soul is even disempowered, maybe I'm not using the right term, to choose this command to love God, which is the only command that we ought to be following right now. How do we, I know you've answered this question in so many ways, but if you could say more about how to truly be able to cultivate this capacity to love and stay there, mm-hmm. not fall.
Well, the problem is that the soul falls asleep, and it doesn't even know it is a soul. It identifies with its ego. And the ego is fragmented, and so it has conflicting drives and desires. But very rarely does an ego have the desire to awaken or to reach God or to have any of that, not at the end of Kali Yuga, at least, when we have been indoctrinated into capitalism and materialism and consumerism, and we want the comfort of the body. We're not interested in the grace of spirit. And so it's because the soul is asleep that the ego takes over and usurps our consciousness. So there is no soul present until it is awakened. And often it has to be awakened by such suffering that the ego itself can't manage. And then the ego finally says, help, you know, and then the soul awakens and says, what did you call me, right? And then, oh, yeah, sure. And then the soul will turn to take refuge with God and all as well. But it often things have to get very dicey before the ego calls for the help of the soul that awakens it, that brings about redemption or at least a taking refuge with God that brings a sense that the grace of God is with one, and one is then able to cope with the kind of adversities that are being faced in the phenomenal plane with a sense that the goodness of God will get one through it. And that faith will work until the soul's purification has reached a point where power, the power of God's presence and grace is even stronger, and the need for faith disappears, that there is knowledge again, and knowledge comes with power and with intelligence. Okay?
At some point, the patience to in one's faith is important. I heard something like that in what you just said, like that, mm-hmm. that faith will take us to a certain point, and then God's grace.
You have to use the faith and mobilize it by taking action to get closer to God. You have to take refuge with God. And this is why the practice of meditation and the doing of service and living as egolessly as possible is important. And also detaching from others. Don't become codependent on others. Don't become needy of others. And don't think that you can awaken others. Right? That's all in the hands of God. And if you try to force others to know the truth, they will usually be angry at you and go in the other direction. So all you can do is shine with that light of God, and that will attract those who are ready to awaken. But you can't forcibly bring that about. So the patience in dealing with others is probably even more important, and recognizing that the fate of everyone is in God's hands, and you can't control it or bring someone to grace. That can only be happened through their own internal movement toward God. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay. Joe? Yeah, go ahead.
Yesterday in Radhama's class, she describes God as being the unknown. And so how am I meant to love and put faith into and trust the unknown, mm-hmm. since it is the unknown?
Yes, it's unknown to the ego. But when you ask yourself, who am I? You don't know the answer to that either. You don't know your real self. So when we're talking about God, we're only talking about your own self. Your own self is what you don't know. And when you do know yourself, not the ego, not the current thoughts, because they're just a phase of the development of consciousness, but the awareness that you know has been there since you were born, the awareness hasn't changed. Your body has gotten bigger, your vocabulary has gotten bigger, your database of experiences has gotten bigger, but the self, the awareness has remained unchanging. And so there's a continuity, right? But what is that awareness? There's a spark of life that is what keeps the body alive, but that will remain alive after the death of the body. And it's that spark, that divine nature that is not part of your ego's personality, but that is unknown to the ego, that if you go within and you discover, you realize who you are and what you are, you will simultaneously realize God, which is that power within you that is responsible for the existence of that life spark itself.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. And also another question. How do we know that awareness does still continue after death or physical death? Like,
how do we know?
How do we know that?
Well, you know that there's evidence from near-death experiencers who have clinically died and gone to the light and come back. But we also know that from an internal knowledge in the heart. And when your heart opens to your soul's nature as well as your supreme nature, you will remember other lifetimes, and you will remember your existence before you were born into this body. And you won't identify with this body. It's just like a car that you buy, and then at a certain point it gets old, you trade it in, you get a new one. And that recognition will be there without any doubt in your heart once you have realized this unknown self that you truly are. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Anurag.
Namaste, Shunya. I apologize. I still have a question. I'm trying to stay in radical acceptance. But something that really is coming up strongly for me is forgetfulness. And the deeper I go into this and purifying, the more it is an obsession. I granted with trying to remember, and I didn't bring a notebook, I didn't bring a pen because I'm digesting too much at the moment, and I wanted to come empty and just accept, just be in radical acceptance. But I mean, you bring up so much wisdom, there's so much beautiful questions being asked, and there's still this, I have to remember this and I have to remember that. Now, why am I forgetting? Why is the forgetfulness increasing as I go deeper? And something that I'm connecting to is enmeshments. I'm still enmeshed in this phenomenal plane. I'm still enmeshed with the other and asking for help, asking for assistance, you know, how are things done, etc. So every time I come into and play a character of some sort, that forgetfulness feels like it's increasing. But as I move on and as one moves on with this process and other parts of this dimension, I mean, there's still going to be participation, commitment at a certain level as a human spirit. So is there, like, I can't keep up with writing things down, and I'm still forgetting. And luckily you're here, and you deliver just the perfect messages, but there's still this, okay, I've got to, as I go into this next scene and next phase and the next hour, remember, Shunya just told you 5 minutes ago, my Jiva Ma, you know, you just had a session. And so how...
Okay, your ego is identified with thought. And your ego resists remembering the main teaching which I gave, which is that you are love. Love is your real self, not thought. Thought will disappear when you have reached the higher chakras. You won't be going through these kind of questions or doubts, and you won't need to remember anything. And you won't forget anything either, because all there is to remember is that you are love. But that's not a remembrance that's cognitive, that can be forgotten. It's the feeling you have. The feeling you have when you are in your real self is a feeling of joy. All right? So stay in joy. You won't want to forget joy. But the moment that you're not in joy, you'll know it. You'll be suffering. And that's when your mind will start working. So I got to remember something. But it is staying in that joy of love, of your true nature, that will free you from the need to think about things. And then everything will happen spontaneously, because love is always accurate. When that love is love of God, which is your real self, then that love actually creates a world in which there is harmony and beauty. And everything works perfectly, and there's no need to worry about anything. Love has no fear and no worries, okay? But the ego is just a mass of fears and worries and resistance to knowledge and resistance, mostly of all, to love, okay? Because of traumas that happened that made one angry and made one fearful and made one lose faith and all of that, the mind developed all of these resistances and this complexity. But we are actually very simple beings of luminous love. That's it. And stay in that and not to worry about anything else. Can you remember that? Okay, good. Blessings. Okay.
I want to find out, I want to ask, what kind of soul is drawn to this knowledge and this wisdom? Can it be a young soul, or it has to be old soul?
No. Old souls only really care about this. The young souls really are more interested in the money and the things that they can get out of technology and all the gadgets at the end of Kali Yuga, and the comforts of travel and airplanes and all of that, which is going away also very quickly. All of those things. Someone who actually wants the development of divine love within and the wisdom of God, no, it's very rare. And only the old souls are drawn to that kind of honey. The others are drawn more to poisons.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Purush.
Okay, this is a question from Mara, who says, I recently heard David Icke talk about his view of apparent reality as a matrix-type trap created by dark forces similar to the Gnostic archons. After death, he says we should not go to the light, as this is part of the trap that brings us back to the wheel of rebirth again, and that the loved one or relative who appears to meet us on the other side is part of the illusion and should not be followed. He said that there's another light behind that light that we should look for instead. Could you comment on this?
If you are in a state of pure love and you have taken refuge with God, with the Supreme Being, the Absolute Self, you will feel the presence and the power of that beingness that you are part of. And that will draw you to the one right light, okay? You don't need to worry about these things, okay? Partly what he's talking about indeed comes from a form of Gnosticism that grew up in the West, and also from maybe a misunderstanding of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which does also speak of these two lights. But they have a very different vibrational quality. And the light of God is a light of such purity and of such love and of such divine protection and ascension and goodness that there is no doubt. You're not being manipulated or exploited or any of that. And when the soul enters into that light and becomes one with it, there is no ego left that could take rebirth. One realizes one was never anything other than that light. And that light is actually the source of all the manifest creation. And that light is all that is actually real. And then all of these questions and doubts will disappear. Okay, I hope that's useful. Would somebody have their hand up? Yeah, Priya.
Thank you. I have a question about the line that you mentioned that as a body, like when the body grows, the physiological and psychological and emotional all has to grow together in order for one to come to a mature level in all different planes. And I was curious if you can speak more about the emotional process of maturation. Because, like, I understand that it's part of the understanding to understand who we are and why there are reactions and not reactions. But what is, like, a correct way of maturing that process and being able to feel without being taken over by things that might not be relevant for the moment, let's say?
Okay. In childhood, because the infant is helpless, it creates a false identification with the mother. I and the mother are one. And its love is united with a need for her presence. And so when the mother is gone, the baby will scream, and she better come really quick or the baby will be traumatized. And there's a gradual, age-appropriate way that the mother will wean the child from that neediness. But it will have internalized the mother as a superego. And the mother's voice will remain in its mind for a long time thereafter, as long as the ego construct remains. The ego mind is split into ego and superego. Eventually, as the child grows older and it recognizes the relation of the mother and the father, assuming there's a relatively healthy couple relationship, there will be a paternal superego voice added onto that as well. Hopefully they are in harmony and on the same page. These days, that's rarely the case. And so you get another conflict between two different voices giving you different commands. And so there's a dissociation within the ego structure with not only the two superego parents, but there's a difference between what the parents say and what the parents do, right? And so they'll say, do as I say, not as I do. But the superego forms that say, do as I do, will also be there. So there will be this increasing split within the ego of which do I follow, what either of them says or what both of them are doing, or my own child ego self-image that is needy of their love and their approval, that then tries to compromise and work out ways of getting the approval of all of these different forces and voices, which becomes impossible and leads to an internal chaos. So the development of one's emotional wholeness requires at a certain point that need and demand are overcome by real desire, which is the desire to know oneself. And the desire to be free of the ego complex that was only there as a kind of larval stage of emotional development, so long as you needed parents. Now, as soon as your body becomes chronologically adult and you're able to take care of yourself as an adult, which in traditional societies is around age 13 or so, right? You should go through a process of ego death. That's what the rite of passage and the vision quest in all of the traditional societies was about. You would drop your ego, you would get a new name, usually from God or from shamanic ordeal that you'd go through. But the whole ego complex with all those superego voices would drop away, and now it would be your soul and your connection to God that would then be your vehicle through life as an adult. That no longer happens. There's no rite of passage in capitalist society. People are deliberately kept as children psychologically throughout their lives so they can be controlled. There's very few adults. Look among the politicians in the world. Do you see any adults there? Very few. And very few in any of the fields of supposedly adult endeavor. And so there's no wisdom. There's no real role models of guidance. So we have to, on our own then, go through a private rite of passage in which we drop the ego and give our love entirely to the real self, and then unite with that real self and realize what we are, which is bodiless, formless presence that is timeless and immortal and eternal and is non-narcissistic. It's egoless. And is able to live in joy and bliss and in recognition and unconditional love for all that is. It's also able to unite that love with the practical need for law and order and coherence and division of labor in a community and in a hierarchy of wisdom and maturity and responsibility, so that there can be a functioning of the community in accord with those who have reached those levels, that they can be responsible for certain kinds of communal functions, are the ones who are appointed to those positions, not those who aren't ready for it. So the community has to function as a wisdom school and to mature those who are in it to gain the power to be able to serve at ever higher levels of bodhisattvahood and Buddhahood that they are able to actually sustain internally and authentically. And that's the why the establishment of healthy communities that are based on truth and on love and on virtue and on the realization of the real nature of being is so necessary. So your love has to be love for that and for manifesting that. And that requires letting go of everything that isn't in harmony with God consciousness. That's our ultimate love. And that brings us the gifts of grace, of wisdom, of joy, of peace. Everything else comes from that attainment of the real self. So I hope that answers your question. Okay? But that's our developmental trajectory when we are truly serving our true nature.
Thank you. Just one follow-up question. Is there any time that the soul feels or the soul has the need to grieve or like kind of its choice to fall asleep and not being awakened? Or is like grief and all these things more on the ego's level?
Yeah, grief is always an egoic reaction to loss. And it's a transition that one has to go through as part of the rite of passage. You have to grieve the death of your own ego before it is achieved, okay? And everything that your ego was attached to, including the superego voices and including all the command system of the family and the role you were supposed to play and all of that that gave you an identity as an ego. All of that has to be let go of, and there is a grieving that goes with that. But the grief soon turns to joy and bliss as soon as you realize what you're getting in exchange for being willing to go through ego death. Okay? All right, thank you. One last question, and then we will adjourn for this satsang.
Okay, this question comes from Ash. I hear this message and believe in the truth of the end of Kali Yuga, yet when teaching and mentoring youth, I must admit that it is not a pleasant idea to start a conversation from. How do we explain that the world is dying to young minds who have not yet had a chance to write things and who, by the grace of God, might just represent the evolutionary intelligence needed to turn things around? How do we frame the Omega Point as a turning point rather than giving up on them?
Well, we're not giving up on anyone, but remember, the soul is not the same as the body. So one could be a child in this current life, but be a very old soul, or be a soul who only needed to have certain kinds of final experiences in order to be liberated from the body. This is a moment of return to spirit, which we have lost. And matter and spirit are on a spectrum. They are actually not different. But matter is a congealed and dense form of spirit, because there is only the one substance of spirit that can appear as matter, it can appear as energy, it can appear as mind, and it can appear as that infinite field of divine light, which is the ultimate matrix, really, in which the quantum wave functions collapse and decollapse, and forms and objects and beings and nature all arise and evolve and devolve, and this whole cosmic process is born and goes through sustenance and then to its natural death and rebirth on a cosmic level. So all of this is, once you are at that level of pure spirit, you recognize that no one is being left behind. There aren't really a multiplicity of souls or of children or of lost beings. There is only that one consciousness that all are returning to. So there's nothing to grieve. There is no one whose life is being cut short, because they'll have another life. You will have many opportunities, just as all of us have had many lifetimes. There's no shortage of that. And there is something more precious than having a life in this plane, which is the return to God consciousness and the life of God, the life of that self who produces and sustains and redeems the fallen world back into itself. It's that life, that eternal life of the Supreme Being, that we have lost and forgotten our relationship to, that will finally bring us to full awakening, illumination, and liberation in our true nature as that, as the one self. And that is the supreme prize that all will receive, whether they're children, adolescents, adults, animals, trees, birds, whatever, it doesn't matter. All are manifestations of God, and that will return, will be bliss for everyone and everything. So I hope everyone recognizes the unconditional beauty of this moment. And it's not a tragedy and not a horror for anyone, but we have to see it with the third eye open. And with the eye of God, we can see the perfection of all that is happening. So blessings to all of you here at the ashram. Blessings for those leaving the ashram who will not be leaving God or forgetting the love of God. And blessings for all of those wherever you may be residing in the physical plane, because all of us are residing only in the heart of God. That's the truth of our residence. So you should write that on your driver's licenses and wherever else, that this is your true residence, and this is the one nation under God that all of us belong to. And once we belong to God, we will be at home anywhere and everywhere and at peace with the world and with ourselves. May that peace and the blessings that come with the presence of God be shared with all of you. Namaste. Namaste.